Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Last year, Lake Effect broadcast a series of conversations about death and dying in the modern world. It turns out, for most of us in the U.S., where death often happens away from home, we tend to shy away from talking about the inevitable. Cherie Milton says, in avoiding talking about death, we're missing an opportunity to learn about life. As a grief counselor and family therapist, Milton has spent the last several years helping patients and their families at Dane County's largest hospice, a Grace Hospice Care. She says each of her patients and their families have approached dying in different ways and taught her what makes for a good death and a good life. She's collected these stories in a new book called Before You Go, Stories for a Better Life from Those Facing Death. She tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce why she wrote the book.
As I begin to do the work as a grief counselor, the patients and their families and being exposed to that sacred time was literally having a huge impact on how I was living my life. I was so affected and realized what really matters and learned how the smaller, trivial things really I could let go when I realized how short life could be and how precious it was.
Well, tell us about some of these lessons that you learned from patients. What was one of the most memorable realizations that you had?
The first story is one of the most powerful for me. This woman who was in her late 50s had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, as we know it by. And that is a disease that just keeps taking things from you. You lose your ability to do anything for yourself. And it's sometimes a slow, very painful, emotionally painful to experience that. And this woman that I dealt with, even though she knew she was dying, she didn't want to die, and she had losses every day. She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't talk. And yet, somehow, every time I visited her, she would find something to be grateful for. And it would just move me so deeply, her ability to have gratitude and be thankful. And even at the end, when she could do nothing, the last time I met with her, she talked about how she didn't want to die and she'd lost everything, but she was so grateful that they couldn't take away her tears. She could still cry and express her emotions about her circumstances. And I was just undone. I was forever changed. I thought, man, I'm going to quit complaining about stupid stuff.
How do you deal with it when you're counseling these patients and their families? I would imagine that, you know, can be frustrating sometimes to feel like you don't have a right to complain about anything because look at what's going on with your patients.
That's true. And it's a balance. As a hospice worker and a grief counselor, I have great peers and co-workers that they understand that we all have that need sometimes just to vent and decompress and you know, spend a little bit of time whining. And yet, much quicker, they help me and I help them get ready to see the big picture. Doing grief counseling with people who are dying, you really quickly get to the point of zooming out and seeing the big picture, what really matters and putting it in perspective, and then laughing together about the true joys in life and working with this population.
What was the most difficult lesson that you've learned? I mean, what was the most difficult story that you put in this book for you to write and to share with others?
The most difficult for me is the chapter that tells the story of informing two elementary age children that their mom was going to die. This family had been very open with their children that the mom had cancer, but they had not gotten to the point where they really explained to them that the cancer was not going to get better and that she was going to die. And telling those two little ones and watching the daughter literally melt on the floor sobbing probably was the hardest thing I've ever done. And just so powerful to see children just react with such compassion and yet so much emotion to realize this mother that they loved and needed was not going to be there in a few months.
But ultimately, you write, it was the right thing to do to tell these children that they were going to lose their mom.
Absolutely. The evidence is pretty clear that the best outcomes almost always are when we are honest with children. Of course, keeping it age appropriate, but for these two school-aged children, when they found out the truth, they were able to have the support to process their emotions, to say what they wanted to say to their mommy, to have the support and openness in their school and in their neighborhood. And it really, it's tragic that she died, but it was such a triumphant, good outcome to see people rally around these children. They learned a lot about support and community.
I mean, that's the thing that I feel like is so difficult in reading these stories, is this idea that the outcome isn't going to be happy, really.
Right.
Ultimately. Right. But your work is really about making it as good as it possibly can be.
That's right. It seems contradictory to say that it was a good death. But at A Grace, we understand in working with this population, that is a true statement. There can be good deaths. No, we don't have the ability to bring the loved one back, and we can't change the disease process. But we can help when families allow us to come alongside and give them the best possible death that they can experience, where the family feels supported, they feel that this tragic event is pulling them closer and not pulling them apart, and it leaves them set up to be much healthier in their survivorship as they grieve the loss of their loved one.
Of course, in not every story does the patient or the patient's family take your advice and take your counseling and make the necessary changes to have that good death. One of the stories that's coming to mind as we're talking about this is that of Mary,
right,
who kind of up until the end wouldn't even accede to her own comfort. She was dying, and yet she refused to lay down.
That's right. And it's such a powerful image still for me. I see this older woman sitting up in her hospital bed and refused to lay down to make herself more comfortable, because she really, really took on that physical posture that if I lay down, that means I've given up and I'm going to die. And as the book describes, she actually did die sitting up, resting on her bedside table. You know, and that was such a lesson for me at her strength and perseverance, that's what she held true to right to the end. Even though my opinion was she could have been a lot more comfortable physically, emotionally, but we really have to just meet the patient where they're at, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And obviously we can only companion them to the degree they allow us to. So when they're resistant, we typically accept the fact that we may never understand their resistance to accept, process, try to make their last weeks or months as best as they can. And we have to just accept that. Hard for us to understand and for her family, but it was what fit for her.
And so what lesson do you take from that to apply to your daily life?
That power of both a fighter. She was a fighter, and she fought right till the end. In the end, she died how she lived. And I really learned that to expect huge change at the end, or to expect myself or others in my life to make big changes when it's contrary to how they've lived up to that point, is probably an unrealistic expectation. And so it helps me to align my expectations of others.
Were there stories, were there experiences that changed how you thought of the grieving process, that helped you in future cases to change how you counsel your patients?
There is. There's a few of the stories that I tell in the book. In dealing with patients and families, those that seem to be wired to be more expressive and process all of the losses that were happening as their loved one was diagnosed and dying, as they talked about the death and processed their grief, it really taught me how after the death, for many of these individuals, their grief process was not as intense. And it was interesting how others would accuse them of being in denial or not really dealing with it. And I realized, no, I think that when people have opportunity to really process it before the death even happens, it does tend to influence and lessen the intensity of the grief they experience later.
So we shouldn't necessarily judge people by how they're expressing their grief?
Absolutely. Grief is so unique and individual, and that can trip us up because we expect others to process and deal with it like we would or like others have. And then that's isolating because people that are grieving will express, hey, it's not like that for me. It's different. And they need that permission and freedom to have that difference.
There's a story about another child that you helped counsel, Ricky, and you talk about how his expression of his grief, obviously, again, as a child being age appropriate, was this kind of shadow grief. And I want to have you explain that concept and tell us, does that apply to adults as well?
It does. And that idea of shadow grief, for Ricky, he didn't necessarily express and articulate that he missed his brother and that he was sad that his brother died. He began to grieve and talk about the things that his brother represented, the roles that his brother played. For example, his brother always helped him to know what was the right bus to get on for school because they had several identical buses that would come by. And so Ricky was tearful and finally exclaimed, I'm going to get in trouble because I don't have anyone to tell me which bus to get on now. And so it was the shadow of all the other things that his big brother represented to him. And adults are the same way. And we call that associated losses, secondary losses. A person dies and we grieve that person, but we also grieve all the roles and responsibilities and daily tasks that that person typically did. And now they're gone and we have to find a new normal.
What kind of lessons are in these stories for people who are caring for somebody who's dying? I mean, what lessons would you point them to say, here is something you can take with you as you go through this difficult journey?
I think as they read through the stories, it helps them to gain perspective that, yes, it's hard and it's sad, and there's probably no magic way to turn that around. But it can be good. It can be enriching. It can influence our future, that there is hope. It can help set new direction. And it also helps individuals who are caregiving not to feel alone. As they read through the stories, they realize many others have gone down this journey.
Do you think that these kinds of lessons are often heard, that people really would apply and put them into practice in our lives? Do you think people can do that?
I think they can. And what I'm told over and over is people will tell me, I didn't get it until all of a sudden I had someone close to me who was dying or died. And by reading through the book, my hope was that all of the individuals that I want to say, hey, you need to come and spend a month at work with me, that'll give you perspective. Obviously, they can't do that. But if they read some of the stories, it helps them to have that front row seat. If we just pause and let ourselves consider, I think we can. I think we can learn and appreciate and have better lives on a daily basis from those who aren't getting that chance because they are watching their days and decline. And so we, as I say at work, any day that I'm not a patient is a great day.
Well, Cherie Milton, thank you so much for sharing these stories and before you go with us.
You are so welcome. I'm just delighted that you would ask me.
Cherie Milton is a family therapist and grief counselor at A Grace Hospice Care in Madison. Her new book is called Before You Go, Stories for a Better Life from Those Facing Death. She spoke with Stephanie Lecce, and you can learn more about the book from a link at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Driving a smarter car might involve driving your current car on a smarter road. We'll talk smart road technology when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.